Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 216, in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. Oh, my God, we've got a great episode this week for your ears. It is going to be great. You are going to love it. New band that I, you know, recently have been introduced to, Au Pairs, the man behind Au Pairs is going to be joining us here in the backyard. His name is Corey Duncan, and he is a fabulous person, along with a very talented musician. And his new record, Wild Part of the World, is out now and available, and we will be featuring music from that album on this week's episode. Let's see, where can you find it? Really quick, let's get this out of the way, shall we? Opairs1.bandcamp.com. That's Opairs, pairs spelled P-E-A-R-S. Like the fruit. You can also look them up on Facebook. O!Pairs. That's a lot of P's, man. It's a good thing we've got a pop stopper on this microphone. How are you folks doing this week? How are you? I hope you are doing well. I will say this: this is a long episode. It gets a little intense. We talk a lot about religion, and we talk a lot about pizza and making the first pizza, and that's where the conversation gets intense. You would think that it would get intense during the religious discussion, but it does not. It's the pizza talk that gets fairly intense and involved, and I hope you guys really enjoy it because this guy, Corey Duncan, he knows his pizza, man. He knows his pizza. I love this guy, and we had a great conversation. Let's see. Oh my God, man, my child. Do you guys have children? How many of you out there have children? I would love to know this. If you have like older kids that are now grown, I would love to get some feedback from you guys, and you can email me Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net if you have any sage advice, because I'm looking for it, man. My three-year-old is freaking out, man. She's waking up and freaking out, and she's going to bed and freaking out, and it's like, I don't know what to do. I yelled at her the other day, and I felt really bad. Actually, it was just yesterday. It was Saturday. And I yelled at her really loud. I didn't know what else to do, but I had to get her attention. I had to get her to calm down. She was tired as fuck. And it was just, she was screaming and throwing this like insane temper tantrum. And I lost it. And I felt really, really bad afterwards. But it was kind of like, it was warranted, right? I mean, she was like kicking and screaming and kicking at me. And her mom, Mairead, couldn't handle it anymore. She had to take care of the five-month-old, and so I go in there and try to calm things down, try to smooth out the situation, which I, you know what, I'm not good at in the first place. I'm learning this stuff, man, and I'm wound tight already, and I'm hoping that I can make the I can make it through with a kid that's going to be even keel. And I'm hoping I'm not rubbing off on her. My anxiety and anger levels are rubbing off on her, which it's seeming like they are a little bit, because she does not know how to control her anger. But she's three, right? Like every 3 year old does that, right? Please tell me that every 3 year old does this. If you have children, tell me, man. Oh my God, I need your help, listeners. Anyway, I yelled really loud, and she immediately went silent, but I could tell she was afraid. And, you know, I will never raise my hand to my daughters, ever. We've talked about that at length, me and my wife, and we've decided we are not going to do that, which I think is a good thing. But I don't know what else to do. I'm running out of things that I can take away from her, right? I'm running out of things that I can say, okay, well, if you're going to do this, if you're going to be freaking out, we're not going to do this. But, you know, we already don't allow her to watch television during the week. So what am I supposed to say? Like, next week, you can't watch movies. She's not going to get that. She's fucking 3 years old, man. She's not going to get it. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, folks. Aaron at air-raid.net. Email me up, will you? Tell me how things are going with your children. Would love to hear it. Oh, my God. Okay. Let's see. A couple of plugs out of the way. Remember, you can find us on Facebook. You can also go to our website, www.air-raid.net, and click on the Archives tab and cycle through all 216 episodes with people like, bands like Death Cab for Cutie, ZZ Ward, Surfer Blood. How about Red Fang? Red Fang has been on this show twice now. Mudhoney, Presidents of the United States of America, David Bazan, John Roderick, all there for your listening pleasure, including comedians like Bob Saget, Jim Brewer from SNL, and Half Baked, by the way. Mike Birbiglia, Eddie Pepitone, Duncan Trussell, man, the list goes on and on. Hari Kondabolu, who else? Paul Scheer, Jason Manzoukas, Steve Ranasisi, all from the show The League, man. Yeah, that's good stuff. air-raid.net, click on the Archives tab, and you can listen to all 216 episodes for free. It's all there, people. All there for you. We're putting it out there, right? Okay, let's get into it, shall we? The new album by Au Pairs is called Wild Part of the World. And this song is called It's Real, and we will be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. It's Real by Au Pairs. Be back in a moment. Waiting for when the feeling's right, if it's a matter of the purity of heart. I've cut my own into the measure of the art. Over the blossom, for uncontrollable delight, I cried a mountain in anticipation of the sight. And everywhere I looked, I saw the gleaming in their eyes. Above a gallery that's draped across the sky. It's real, the way it holds me like an infant child. Real, the taste of honey from the meek and mild. Shake with the terror every night, waiting forever, waiting for when the feeling's right. If it's a matter of the purity of heart, I've cut my own into the measure out the yard. It's real, the way it holds me like an infant child. Real, the taste of honey.
Yeah.
Was it like the whole thing just like went up or
went
like...
up? Yeah. And
oh,
then
shit.
Like the evening, I watched a snippet of the news report on it, and they were talking to some of the people that work in the building,
mm-hmm.
and this guy was like talking about what happened, and then his like supervisor or manager, somebody that was higher up in the company, like came over and was like, "Okay, that's enough. That's enough. You need to stop talking."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was weird, right? Wow. Like right on camera.
Wow.
Like you need to stop talking about this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit.
Yeah. So weird.
That's
weird
so
shit.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Corey Duncan of the band Au Pairs joining me here in the backyard. How you doing, sir?
I'm living the dream.
Are you?
Day in, day out.
Yeah.
Can't
yeah.
stop, won't stop. I don't know. It's just like the thing I always say. You know
yeah,
what I mean? Whenever
yeah.
someone's like, "How you doing?" I'm just like, "Oh, I'm living the dream." You know? Just always sounds good.
I usually say coconuts and palm trees. Like if somebody like that's like my offshoot of living the dream. Right?
I like it.
I've
yeah.
changed it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's
I've
like,
taken
yo,
out
I'm
the
breezing,
living
man.
The dream part. And put in coconuts and palm trees.
That's awesome. I
yeah.
like that a lot. Yeah,
it
yeah.
catches a lot of people that I work with off guard. And I think that's why I do it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. No, that's my motivation for most things is to confuse people at work and that sort of thing.
Confuse the shit out of people.
Yeah, totally.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And therefore, a lot of people that I work with think I'm a total fucking weirdo.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
But that's like... I don't know. That makes it a lot more fun. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
sure.
kind of like,
yeah.
Because what difference does it make if they
yeah.
think you're weirdos? You know what I mean? Just makes more, like makes life more fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. I will stand. I have been known to stand in one spot at work, like in the middle of the hallway, and I'll stare at somebody in a cubicle, like 3-4 cubicles away. So a little, you know, a bit away mm-hmm. from me. And I'll just stare at them, smiling awkwardly until they look up. And I think it's hilarious,
mm-hmm.
but it really weirds some people out.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can
but
see,
that's the whole point, right?
Yeah, like... it's the whole point, dude. There's a couple people that think it's really funny,
mm.
But most people not so much.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But every once in a while, you kind of meet your match, you know? Someone will be like,
oh, yeah,
I can tell this dude's trying to fuck with me right now.
Sure, sure. Yeah, there's some, like, there's a guy I work with. I don't know if I've told this before, but there's an older man that I work with that is kind of like an evil genius
mm.
a little bit. Like, he's an engineer, and he's very, very smart,
mm.
but he's just fucking wacky,
mm.
you know? And, like, and he doesn't, like, not wacky in the sense where he's, like, a funny dude. Because he doesn't talk much.
Yeah.
He just kind of like almost autistic. He
huh,
he might uh-huh. be on the spectrum a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But every time I catch him in the bathroom, like I come into the bathroom and he's in there using the urinal or something,
mm-hmm.
his pants are all the way down on the floor. Like he takes his pants all the way down.
Oh, it's so funny.
And
you
to
know,
pee in the urinal, which is so off-putting.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, you know what? I think I'm weird and you know, but this guy fucking he owns it.
Yeah, owns totally. It. It's just yeah. like, yeah, you can't, you know, what are you going to say? It's just like I mean, you know, cuz that reminds me. I used to do that kind of stuff when I was a kid and then it kind of dawned on me one time. I was like, "Wait, why do I need to put my pants all the way down in order
yeah, yeah,
to like stand
yeah.
up at a urinal? This is
sure.
weird." And I was
yeah.
like, "Oh, people must think I'm kind of a weirdo." And then I stopped doing it. But the weird thing is I still get weird peeing next to people at urinals. It's hard for me to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Especially in like a trough or something like that. There's a little bit of, you know, there's still like it's ingrained in men in America that you should be embarrassed about your wang.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is not cool. Like, there's no reason to be embarrassed. Some
it's
guys
there.
Are bigger than others. That's
mm-hmm.
fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a little bit of... How do we get on this topic? There's some fear in there. There's anxiety
mm-hmm.
associated
mm-hmm.
with that now. You know, it's been, like I said before, it's ingrained in us.
Yeah.
That we should be embarrassed
mm-hmm.
about our privates.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And so, yeah, sometimes you just can't pee.
Right, which sucks.
Even though
you
need to.
And that's even, like, worse. Like, you're just standing there, like, three people, like, use the one next to you, and you're just standing there, like,
yeah.
will you guys stop coming in this bathroom? And then, I mean, I usually just go straight for the urinal, but, like, I mean, the, whatchamacallit, you know, the closey door, John.
The closey door one? Yeah, yeah, yeah. The stall?
Yeah, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
yeah, the stall. But, But yeah, if that's not available, or like I'll do that thing where I'll stand there and then there'll be like three people that walk up next to me and then I'll go in the stall and just be like, man, I don't know. It just makes me feel even weirder.
Well,
gotta do what you gotta do though, right?
Like, I figure that most of the time, like I do that kind of stuff all the time too. But I figure like most of the time people would just be like, oh, he started peeing and then realized he needed to go number two, you know? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
That's, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's perfectly logical. People do that. You ever have the thing where you're at work in like one of the stalls and then the dude next to you just decides to strike up a conversation?
Yes, and that makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like I'm it took me a long, long time, Corey, to get comfortable to even go number two at my workplace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I would wait.
Yeah.
Until everybody was gone, or I would go find like a secret bathroom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's always clutch if you can find one of those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But apparently now, like, people have found out about my secret, and they're using it as well now, and it's not cool.
That's not
but,
cool.
But, yeah, man, that's it took me so long to get comfortable with being able to do that.
Yeah.
And then there's the fucking guy that comes in, and he's clicking through on his phone. He's like, hey. Hey, did you hear the one about, you know, and you're just like, what, yeah. Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, I'm just like, is it cool if I just don't respond? Because he's going to know I heard him and everything. Yeah. I don't have headphones in or
but
anything.
But that's the same type of person that is like super comfortable with just letting it go in the bathroom too. Like, you know, loud gas.
Yeah,
and just like pushing it through, right? This is a gross episode. This is the grossest conversation I've had on here in a long time.
I'm pleased that I could provide this for you within the first 3 minutes of this whole thing.
Now, Corey, not to change the subject, but let's do that.
Okay, let's
Corey, the first time we met, I believe it was backstage at Sasquatch a couple years ago. You were hanging out back there, and you're a tall guy, and I think we talked a little bit. But then we met again at this this Do 206 launch party. What was that, like last year? Was that last year?
Yeah, I feel like it
kind of. It was close to it, right?
Yeah, maybe a little later than this time of year last year or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were up there doing DJ. You were doing the DJ set, and I was the host.
Yep.
And I wanted to ask you, because I haven't asked you about this yet. You remember that night, right?
I do.
Okay. We were having some sound issues on the PA.
Yeah.
I seem to remember. And I was a little bit nervous, and anxious about being up on stage in front of a lot of hip, like in the know people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How did I do? Did I do
you
okay?
You did wonderful. You did wonderful.
I feel like I didn't make any fans that night.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
Like... 'Cause I started making fun of the crowd.
Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, because this is a thing, right? And this is like, this is something that like I've been trying to figure out since I've been in Seattle, because I grew up around here. I moved away when I was 19, lived in Philly for a bunch of years, came back recently, been back for 2 years. So I kind of feel more acclimated to the East Coast still.
Okay.
And I remember like when I moved out to the East Coast, I was like, man, every single person I meet is a complete asshole. And then I just kind of got used to it. And I was like, no, they're just like talking about like whatever. They're not really shy about asking you questions or whatever. Or they make fun of you and tease you about stuff. And it's just all part of the game or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So kind of got used to that. Sorry, I just burped all over the microphone.
Ooh, I'm going to have to wash that now. That's disgusting.
Yeah, I might need to. But like, so in coming back to Seattle, I find that like, it's not as like, I mean, people just like, you just bust people's balls. You just say fucked up shit to each other and it's funny. You know what I mean? That was kind of something I was more used to in the East Coast, but you could tell that it was just joking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you could tell the difference between someone really trying to like hand you some shit or like someone just fucking with you. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like people in Seattle don't get that as much, like, at least when I do it. And I've never really been sure if it works that way for other people. Apparently it does, you know, because it's just like, it's funny, you know, it's like, it depends on what you're saying, you know, like you could say something really specific that would be like, oh, come on, dude, that's kind of mean, you know, but like for the most part, I feel like there's a lot of things you can say that should be, well, I mean, whatever you
should be fair game.
Yeah. You know, like it's not, as long as it's not like really, you know, directly insulting or I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
But
well, I was kind of drunk too. And I remember at one point, like I was like, come on guys, we're all cool here. We all got the cool glasses and everything. And there were these like, this group of like three dudes that were standing in front, you know, skinny jeans, and they had the cool jackets on and stuff like that. And so I was looking directly at them and I was like, come on, guys, we're all cool here. We all got the cool glasses. Come a little closer forward to the stage, you know? But I realized, like, because I had been drinking a little bit and didn't really notice it, but, like, the sound quality when the people, when, like, the musicians were getting up there singing karaoke was, like, ear-piercing. And so that's why people weren't standing, like, right up next to the stage.
Sure,
plus,
yeah.
It's not really a show, right? It's karaoke. Right. You don't want to be all the way up there.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so I felt like a bit of an a-hole. I don't think I turned anybody on to the Air Raid podcast that night.
Yeah, I mean, it is possible that I might have been in the bathroom for some of that, too, because those were the opportunities.
Sure, going in public.
I was like, you know, because, I mean, there was free booze that night.
Yes.
And people kept passing me free booze, which was awesome. Then I had to go to the bathroom a lot, but I was playing a lot of jams, you know, so. But, but yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, I didn't hear anything that sounded to me like,
okay,
oh,
good,
he's beat a
good
dick.
And
I didn't know
asshole.
You at that time, so I could have had that impression, I suppose. Like, I don't know this guy, but he seems like a real dick.
Seems like a real East Coast piece of shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Corey, okay, so you mentioned that you used to live here and then you moved away. I did not know that. I thought you were just straight up a transplant from the East Coast.
Oh,
where did you live here in Washington? Where did you
I lived up? Not too far from here, not to disclose your secret location, but I grew up in Shoreline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I lived in, in Bremerton for the first three years of my life.
Okay.
Which I don't remember that well, but I do remember a little bit.
All right. All right.
I remember grazing on some grass because I thought it was a cow, and it was cool. It's like my first memory. That happened in Bremerton, but pretty much everything else was in Shoreline.
Uh-huh.
So not too far from Aurora Village, if you know where that is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go up there now. Well, close to that, we have to cross the street to get to the pool.
Oh, yeah.
Up there.
Right.
For my daughter's swim lessons.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We go up to Shoreline because it's like $100 cheaper than
That's
it is
cool.
here in Seattle.
Nice.
It's crazy.
That's convenient.
Yeah, right? Yeah, totally. So what? Why the big moves?
Well, like, it was kind of...
From Bremerton over to Shoreline is kind of a big move, and then from Shoreline to friggin' wherever you were, Philadelphia?
Yeah, Philly, yeah. I lived in Jersey for a year before I ended up in Philly.
Oh, okay.
So it was like, yeah, so Bremerton moved when I was three. My parents actually, they're not like real nightlifers or anything, but they were apparently really bored of living in Bremerton. They just didn't find it was exciting enough. So, which is, I mean, I don't know. My mom really, like, she likes
Well, it was fairly rural.
Right?
I mean, it was a very rural place, like, back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I grew up over there, not in Bremerton,
oh, you did?
But
okay.
over on the Kitsap Peninsula. And so, I'm familiar with that area.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was very, very rural.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, if there weren't any trees, we would have had, like, a view of some kind of body of water.
Sure.
I haven't spent enough time over there at all to remember much about it. But, like, it was nice. It was kind of a nice little spot, you know? But, yeah. So, I don't remember too much of that. But, like, I remember, like, moving to Shoreline and, like, the day we showed up at our place and, like, which I believe was, like, on my older brother's birthday or something. It was some significant thing like that.
Yeah.
And then, That was cool. Like, we had, like, a blackberry bush right by my place that, like, had a trail through it, and we could, like, pick all these blackberries in the summer. That was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was cool. It was a nice place to grow up. And then, like,
How long did you stay in the Shoreline, then?
I lived there till I was 19, and it's, like, I moved to the East Coast after that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I lived at my parents' house, and then I met this dude that was from Jersey that was living in actually not too far from where I live in Columbia City now.
Uh-huh.
And so we played music a little bit, and then he, like, after a few months, just wanted to move back home to Jersey. It was all like homesick and whatever. So I was, like, in community college at the time, and I was just taking classes. I didn't really know what I was trying to do. And I was just like, yeah, like, I'll move out there with you. Why not? You know? So,
sure.
So it was like, and I was, like, really a sheltered kid. Like, I went to Catholic grade school, but was homeschooled from, like, seventh grade on. Never went to high school or anything. Just got a GED. So, like...
Really?
So, I had, like, no friends. Really didn't interact... Like, hardly interacted with anyone. I mean, I worked at, like, fast food restaurants and stuff when I was, like, 15 and onward.
Uh-huh.
So, like, those were the only people I knew. And So me moving to the East Coast was like terrifying. Like I didn't know anyone out there.
That's
and
huge.
Like, yeah. And I just like, I'd never not lived with my parents and I just was like totally sheltered, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah. What were your parents, what was growing up with your parents like? What, they were fairly religious then, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They're super into Jesus. Like, yeah. I grew up Catholic, but kind of on like the more fundamentalist side of Catholicism. Where
almost
it's
evangelical?
Really, yeah, yeah, totally. Okay. Like, it's the kind of thing where like, you know, my mom, like, if I was friends with a kid, she'd be like, yo, are they Catholic? I mean, she didn't say yo. I threw that part in there. It'd be awesome if she did that. I feel like she uses that word nowadays just to, like, try to, like, you know, be down with her kids and
sure,
stuff.
Sure, sure.
But she'd be like, yeah, is that kid, you know, is he Catholic? And I'd be like, oh, I don't know. I guess I'll find out. And then, like, you know, ask him or find out about it. And,
so they didn't want you hanging know. Out with anybody who wasn't of faith?
It wasn't like that I wasn't allowed to, but it yeah. was just, she just wanted to know. It was the first thing she wanted to know about him. And I
okay.
think part of it was like, okay, like,
so that's
do I
how
need
she
to...
kind of, that's how she kind of judged people's character. Was
yeah.
Whether or
I mean,
not they were Catholic.
Yeah. To some degree, I wouldn't say that she was like, I mean, my mom is a very sweet lady and uh-huh. like, it's weird. Cause like, you know, Catholicism, especially that kind, a lot of Christianity is very, very strict and really not inclusive and has a lot of fucked up like beliefs about a lot of things that I really don't care for. But like, but I will say that my mom was always just like, even if she was like, okay, not down with like, whatever, like homosexuality or anything like that, she
yeah.
was always just like, you know, but Jesus loves them just as much as he loves you or anybody else. And like,
well, that's good,
you know. So it was, yeah, like she wasn't like, oh, you know, fuck this group of people or whatever. She was always like kind of sweet about it, even though like I still can't, you know, I still think that stuff's kind of hateful, but like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. But she was, you know, it like, well, it was interesting because like, so my neighbors growing up were like these two dudes that were in World War II together. And I guess as far as my parents knew, they were just like these two
friends.
Dudes that, yeah, were buddies and just had a place together and into
yeah,
their 60s
yeah.
or whatever. But but they never really talked about it. And they were our neighbors in Bremerton. But my parents totally trusted like them with us. Which if you kind of think about how a lot of Christians seem to feel about homosexuality, they have all these really fucking backwards ideas about it. So
oh,
it's
sure,
kind of amazing
sure.
that like my parents were just like totally down, you know? And of course they didn't know if they were a couple, but you know, they
yeah.
didn't really.
Well, do you think it was a bit of like naivete or was it?
To some degree, I think
yeah.
it was just also maybe that that didn't necessarily mean to them that these dudes weren't trustworthy or something like
oh,
that.
Sure.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was kind of like, so
wait a
always...
minute, they lived next to you in Shoreline as well?
No,
or
not in Shoreline,
Bremerton.
Just in Bremerton.
Okay,
but then,
okay.
like, we would take vacation in Long Beach, Washington every summer for,
uh-huh.
like, years. And those dudes had just randomly moved there at some point. So we got
oh,
back
wow.
in touch with them, and we would visit them, like, for an afternoon every time we were there.
Uh-huh.
And it was, like, those dudes both passed away within the last, like, 10 years or something.
Wow.
A little more than that, maybe. But it was really sweet. Their names were Roy and Jim. And my mom said, and I still kind of don't get this, but it was so sweet. And I almost don't want to ask her about it because it's just so nice the way it is. She was like, Roy went to be with Jim in heaven. And I thought that was so sweet and like kind of doesn't make any sense with like any of the beliefs that she seems to hold. But like, I was just kind of like, cool, mom. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'll take it. yeah, I don't know. It's complicated, you know, because
yeah,
she's
yeah,
a very accepting
yeah.
person. But at the same time, just based on like the whole world that she, you know,
sure.
lives in, it's just
yeah.
kind of weird that
how
like,
is your how is your dad like what
he just is a
he?
Really quiet dude, you know.
Uh-huh.
So like he was always around and stuff, but just like, you know, my mom was mostly the discipliner, and then like we would hit him up if it was like, oh man, mom said we can't get Wolfenstein 3D, like hey dad, so here's this game called Wolfenstein 3D. Can we have that? And he would be like, yeah. And we'd
sure.
be like, oh, cool. You know? And then like, but that just like, we just kind of made it harder for him too. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, but he, I mean, as far as I know, he's kind of, you know, totally down that same stuff too. It's just sort of a different,
you
he's
could
just
never
less
talk,
vocal about stuff.
You could never talk to him about it.
Yeah. I mean, he just wouldn't really volunteer that kind of stuff too
uh-huh,
much. You
uh-huh.
know what I mean? So like, and I don't know. We've never really got into like, I know he knows like when, cause my mom's not really like that, like, oh, let me like quote scripture all the time. She'll be like, Glenn, what's that one thing that Jesus said that one time about it not being cool for you to like, you know, tease your brother? And he'd be like, oh, you know, he would like pull out some like totally like complete quote. And I'd just be like, damn, dude. All right.
I really won't know tease my brother. Dad.
Great job.
Yeah. So when did that, when did I take it you have kind of strayed from faith?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I seriously went to church like until like well after I'd moved to the East Coast. I was like 23 and still going to church on Sunday. Like we'd be on tour. My old band would be on tour and I'd try and find places on Sunday to
really?
Go to church.
Really? So you held on to that through your early 20s.
Yeah, yeah, for a long time. I mean, and it's like, and no offense to anybody that is religious, I totally just like, everyone has their own path or whatever, but like, you know, I just like really, I feel stupid that I stayed with it for that long, you know? Because the only reason I really stuck with it is like fear of going to hell, you know?
Sure.
Because like, that's sort of the whole like...
Well, that's the thing with religion, right?
Yeah.
Or that's the thing with Christianity, at least, is that if you aren't in it, then yeah, you are going to hell.
Yeah, right? Totally. Well, my mom believed in this thing called the 3 days of darkness. That was like, there was a book written about it by someone who was vouched for by the Catholic Church, and I forget in what, you know, capacity. But she like spoke to the Virgin Mary or something like that, you know, and this is like... Just like all this stuff that like I heard all the time growing up, you know, my mom would read these books by people that spoke to saints and whatever.
Sure.
And so there was this one thing that was like before the year 2000, there's going to be this thing called the 3 days of darkness where Jesus is going to like the world's getting so bad that like Jesus is going to allow like hell to reign on earth pretty much. So you go in your house, there'll be a sign like God will give you a sign and non-believers won't see it or they won't believe it or something like that. And you'll know who the other Christians are because you'll see a cross on their forehead that nobody else will see unless they're believers. And so like, you'll know, go in your house, lock your doors for three days.
Uh-huh.
You stay in there. You just like pray and like have like a candle or something. You close all the blinds, curtains, whatever, lock the doors. And if someone knocks on your door and is like, it's your neighbor, please let me in. Don't let him in. It's Satan. And hell will just rain on earth and tear everything apart. And then after that period of time, you go out and it's like fucking Noah's Ark or something, you know? That's and like I heard about this shit like it was fucking the truth. Like this was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I totally firmly believe that by the time I was 18 years old, that shit was going to happen, you know, because of our sinfulness. So that's kind of like, you know, what made me stick with it is because like I was very, very impressionable, more so than my older brother, for sure. My older brother was like, fuck all this, and just was like done. You know,
really?
By the time he was like 15, 16, he was just like, fuck this. And he
so
was doing his own thing.
Were you, when you were like, I mean, you're still a teenager when you're hearing this story, right? Mm-hmm. That's got to be kind of a scary thing, right? If you were, I was an impressionable teenager as well.
Yeah.
But I didn't prescribe to any religion.
Right.
My dad, in fact, was very much against it. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like if I were in that position at the age of like 17, 18 years old, like I would be freaked the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
if that
totally.
Was the story that I was hearing, like that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like
well,
I'd be like a prepper.
Totally.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, I mean, it's like.
Getting dry goods stockpiled in my basement or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and actually my parents still do that. They
really?
Still have like, yeah.
They get ready for it.
Yeah, they've got like just like thousands of gallons of water, you know?
Wow.
They've got bags and bags and bags of, well, maybe thousands, exaggeration. Let's say hundreds of gallons of water.
Okay.
And like...
That'd be a lot of water.
A lot of water. A lot of rice and canned goods and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Wow.
And yeah,
not a bad
I mean,
thing to do in case there's an earthquake.
You never know,
like
yeah, because I mean, an earthquake could realistically happen, I suppose. So
sure.
It's, you know... But yeah, no, I mean, I heard about this stuff from the time I was like 8 years old. I think maybe if I heard it when I was like 15 or something, I would have been like, all right, that seems a little nutty. But since
sure,
I'd heard it
yeah.
since I was like eight
it was
something.
Ingrained. It was ingrained
yeah,
in you.
Yeah, just so deeply ingrained. I just had, you know, and for all I knew, like, you
so
know.
So did you go through, I mean, you're walking through life like afraid of everything?
Yeah,
pretty much?
Terrified. Absolutely terrified.
Wow.
Yeah, which made me a really depressive kid, too, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
And I can't blame it all on my parents. I mean, I probably was just a depressive kid or something, too, but, like, but I think that had a whole lot to do with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it just was, like, I was just like, man, I can't have any thoughts at all. Like, oh, that girl's cute. Damn it. Like, it's like I already fucked up.
Fuck.
You know what I mean?
My parents are going to lock me in the house.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I was like, I can't win. Like, I'm just a horrible person. There's nothing I can do about it, you know?
Oh, my God.
And that was really kind of crippling for a really long time, you know? But, yeah, and it's like, I never really had that, like, huge, like, rebellious, like, I'm fucking done. Like, I'm just going to, have, like, sex with as many people as will have sex with me, and I'll just do as many drugs as possible.
Yeah.
Like, I never really did that. But, like, but it definitely just, like, getting out of that stuff was seriously, like, just a huge, like, whoa, like, the world is all of a sudden so much bigger and everything's cool. Like, I mean, not everything is cool, but you kind of start to realize, like, that a lot of things are cool that were not cool before. You
sure,
know what I mean?
Sure.
And like,
so what brought you out of it? And where were you at in life at that time?
I think it was like, I mean, like I said, I went to church until I was like 23, but I think I was on the way out for years before that. It was just that it was such a slow, like, process.
There was
still a
bit of fear there.
Yeah, it was, and it was all fear. That's really what the whole thing was, you know?
Sure,
but I remember like being, I don't know, maybe like mid-teens and just being like, well, some people are just gay. Like, some people just are. And, like, why should I really, like, hold that against them? You know what I mean? Like, I may or may not have those feelings myself, but, like, who cares if this person does, you know? And I think that was kind of the first thing where I was like, even my mom was like, you know, it's just, like, a cross that they have to bear, that sort of thing, you know? And so she accepted, I think, that some people just have those sorts of, you know, whatever. Some people are inclined that way and some people aren't. But,
sure.
But it was like, it was kind of just like, it's like, why would God make someone feel like they're a horrible person just for the heck of it? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I wasn't born with anything like that where I'm just like, you know, I mean, other than like what I was talking about, that you can't really do anything without feeling bad about it. But like, that just like, you're born thinking there's something wrong with you. You know what I mean? And I was just like, that sucks. Like, I was like, this is mean. This is all just really mean. Like, I don't want to have these kind of opinions about people. And like, I started meeting a lot of people in the world that were like, you know, gay or like, you know, whatever, any other kind of thing, like, you know,
and they're not bad people.
Yeah. Anything out of the scope that I was like raised to find acceptable. I was just like, all these people are totally fine just doing their own thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason for me to give a shit one way or another. What, you know, like, it's just like, I just kind of started like realizing it was so much effort for me to kind of like jump through all these hoops and be like, no, this is wrong because of whatever. And, you know, because I really was like not in any of that shit by the time I even left home. But like, but I just stuck with it out of fear. So it was kind of, it was a gradual thing. And I guess I'm that sort of dude. I just do things very gradually. I don't make choices and just like do it right away, you know?
Right. You got to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm definitely the same way. I got to like prepare myself. And I'm finding like, you met my, my 3-year-old daughter inside. I'm finding that she's the same way too. You got to prepare her for a change, right?
Mm-hmm.
My parents had to do that to me all the time. Like, if we were going to go on vacation or something like that, or something was going to change, like that they knew was coming up, you know, either mom and dad were going to go away for a little bit, and so grandma and grandpa were going to come over. Like, that was like a 2-week-long conversation that they had to like prepare me for.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, Aaron, this is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Like emotionally prepare me for shit. And they fucking rub it at my face too. Whenever we're hanging out, they always have to bring something like that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do this. Corey, let's go with our second musical break. We're featuring music off of your new album that's out now. What's the album called again?
It's called
I have it in Spanish.
That's awesome. It's called Wild Part of the World.
Wild Part of the World. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a great album, by the way, man.
Thank you.
This is super good.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, this song is called I'm a Wild Part of the World.
Yes, indeed.
Right there. There you go. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Corey Duncan of the band Au Pairs. Stay with us. My dreams are the sky. Part to read and come to me. Grab and swing from tree to tree. When you feel a holy hope,
with an infinite sound. The trumpet breathing expounds. The ground will shake with me gracefully. Send my feet spinning round. Part the reeds and come to me. Grab and swing from tree to tree. When you feel a holy home, drop the hatchet on the road. I'm a wild part of the world.
So you're kind of a pizza connoisseur too. We've talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
What, Corey? What makes the perfect pizza?
Man. Okay.
I know you have a philosophy behind this, and I wanted to get this down.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the record.
I mean, it's like, okay. So I guess if I was going to describe like a really quality slice of pizza, for one, if you pick it up and it doesn't change shape, that's not a good sign.
That's not a good sign. Yeah. It's got to be loose.
Yeah. It's got to have some floppiness to it.
Okay.
And the thing is, like, and this is, you know, all this stuff is just things I learned from being on the East Coast. But, like usually if a slice is, like, good, then a good way to eat it would be there's this kind of, like, you fold it. Like,
fold
you know
it.
What I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, totally. You fold it in half at the crust.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of shove it into your mouth from there.
Right. Yeah. Totally. It's like, I think that's like, that's a good start. There's also like, and this is all kind of open to interpretation. And even though like, it's hilarious how I'm like just so well known for my deep love of pizza, which is wonderful because I do deeply
I now,
love pizza.
I now have like several friends, probably around seven
mm-hmm.
Friends that are known for their love of the pizza pie.
That's awesome.
Like that. It's amazing, and it's like and it all started from with my friend Andy Hurst,
uh-huh.
who I learned about, and people would always constantly bring it up, dude. Like, hey, when what's your favorite pizza right now? You know, they just ask them in common conversation, and then from there on, like, I start learning about all these people that I know, like yourself, that are just like literally pizza connoisseurs and can talk about pizza,
yeah,
for hours.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and I totally can too. But it's awesome because I, you know what I love just as much as like
yeah.
how like just as well. I'm not gonna say as much as I love how delicious pizza is because that's a wonderful thing. I mean,
yeah, sure,
if God
sure.
has given us one gift in this world, it's the deliciousness of pizza.
Sure, the combination of
the Holy Trinity
sauce
of
and mozzarella and bread.
Yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. But So there's a lot of like, okay, I'm going to talk about like some Philly things real quick. Cause like, so there's this one place in Philly that like, I swear by, I'm like, this is the shit. Like if you want to get a good slice, and I'm not saying like not fancy at all, like
okay.
really
yeah.
not fancy.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
cause to me, good pizza and fancy pizza are not the same thing.
No.
Fancy pizza
nope.
is a different
nope.
category.
Nope.
It almost
nope.
should be called something else that doesn't start with a P or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
it should be called like it should be called like fancy non.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. You know? Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Some, like, bread-oriented thing. I'm not saying it's not delicious. Like, it's totally cool, but that's not what I'm talking about. Like, if sure. you're like, yo, man, yeah, I got this really great pizza place you should check out. Their large pizza is $45 and has lotus blossoms on it. I'm like, yo, dude, you can take that shit elsewhere, all right? Like, I mean, it's like... it's like, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's delicious, but why would I want to spend $45 on some pizza? You know what I'm saying?
That's sure, just against yes, please.
My new religion of
yeah,
pizza.
Yeah.
Like, but so like, so there's this one place called Lorenzo's.
Okay.
And if anybody from Philly was listening, they already knew I was going to say that 10 minutes ago. Like, this, I love Lorenzo's. I love it. Like, uh-huh. It's like a huge slice of pizza. And
now what are we talking about? Is this like a deep dish? Or is
this is just like, I guess you would call it like New York style.
Okay,
you know?
New York style pizza.
It's like hand tossed pizza that's kind of like, the denseness is kind of like medium. It's not super thin. It's also not like real thick. And
real
it's
thick,
not
yeah.
like, the cheese is hella greasy, but the crust is not like super greasy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so I'm not saying it's not greasy pizza. It's real fucking greasy. But like, it's like just large and like so... People can't hear what I'm doing with my hands right now,
yeah.
but it's like, so if this is the shape of the pizza, you fold the whole front of it in half. So it's like
sure.
lengthwise, you fold it in half, which is kind of like unique to that
yeah,
place.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's such large slices. And it's just like, I just love it that they hand it to you folded over. It looks so like unappealing from the
oh,
get-go,
really?
You know what I mean? But that's like its own special kind of appeal, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So this place, like the reason people like... we'll give it a pass as they're like, oh, you know, it's open till 3 a.m. So that's what makes it cool, you know? But I'm like, no, fuck you, dude. It's great at like 11 a.m. And I've done that like hundreds of times, way more times than I should be happy to admit. But I'm not ashamed. Not ashamed to say I've been there thousands of times
yeah,
and eaten
yeah.
slices any time of day for any reason at all.
Sure, sure.
Any number of slices.
Okay, so let me, okay, so that's your number one pick.
Yeah.
Lorenzo's?
I would say Lorenzo's.
Okay.
Is probably my favorite slice.
So if somebody came to you, and I think I know what your answer is going to be
mm.
on this, and they say, hey, you got to try this pizza. It's a little bit on the pricier side, but it's, you know, it's got goat cheese on it.
Sure, yeah.
What do you say to, like, a goat cheese pizza?
I'm going to say, hell yeah.
Really?
Like, pizza is pizza. Well... that's kind of been my
See,
thing
that's
lately.
Where I kind of I start drawing the line. It's like, no, you can't fuck with the cheese. The
well,
cheese has
yeah.
got to stay as like a mozzarella.
Yeah. Here's my thing is that like, okay, yeah, I will totally eat that and I will be happy, I'm sure. However, caveat, no, it's not like, that's not like pizza pizza. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you
right,
still can't
right.
really be like, oh, this is the best slice of pizza. Well, it's not technically pizza, you know?
I agree with you hands down. Like,
yeah, yeah, totally.
Totally agree. Totally
I mean,
agree.
It's not like, you know, because people do like, it's even on the East Coast, like in like totally awesome New York places, there's the thing with like the little ricotta, like dollops or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's no mozzarella. It's just like ricotta dollops or like sometimes it's like people really like tomato pie out there that's got no cheese at all. I don't fuck with that. But like, you know, it's like, hey, I mean, whatever, like teach zone or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's definitely got some like roots out there and it's been going for a long time. So whatever. There's also certain places, and this is kind of interesting, that put the cheese under the sauce.
Right. And that's like a true deep dish pizza, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Generally
that's
stuff's more deep dish. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never had a pizza like that. I've always wanted to try it.
Yeah.
But it seems weird to me.
It is weird. Yeah. It's weird. I'm not going to say like I would generally go with that over regular delicious pizza, but like I don't know why I have to throw delicious in there. It's just like I can't just say regular pizza. That sounds like I'm saying it's bad or something or anything less than like
sure.
ultimately
yeah,
satisfying.
Yeah, yeah right.
But you know what I'm saying. So, but like, yeah, I mean, what the fuck is I talking about? Some kind of pizza related thing.
Well, we hit
oh,
like, the deep dish, like yeah. having the sauce on top of the cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. I mean,
yeah.
I'm down. Like I'm
sure.
totally.
I'll eat that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like a pizza. There was a place in Kingston,
mm-hmm.
Washington that was around back in the '80s. It was called That's a Some Pizza. And it now exists, I think, in a couple places. Because it became a chain, but it's not the same anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was growing up, that place was the shit because they would put so much cheese on their pizza. It was like you pulled that piece of pizza off, and it was so gooey with cheese.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, I mean, it was real. It felt like it was like real mozzarella, because real mozzarella kind of, you know, melts a bit differently than like your, you know, grated stuff that has that weird like powder substance on it, so it doesn't stick together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this would, it would just get so gooey. There would be so much cheese on this thing that it would like start pulling the cheese off of the next piece of pizza. And you got a whole bunch of stuff on that, man. And
speaking
it was,
my language.
I mean, God damn, that was some good stuff. But that I can't find. There was one, Rozzi's, up here in North Seattle, used to make their pizza kind of like that.
Yeah.
But they no longer do that.
Yeah.
And like that's, it's going the way of the Jaybird, man.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's going bye-bye.
There are a couple of spots that I totally will rep. One is called Brooklyn Brothers Pizza.
I've heard of that place.
Not like it doesn't exist in Seattle. There's one in like Everett, and there's one in Mukilteo.
Right.
And I happen to be up there because my one buddy lives in like Mukilteo area, so we like got some pizza there.
Mukilteo, for people who don't know, is a town very far north of Seattle.
Yes, indeed. Yes. And like what I had heard was that this pizza, like I heard that they fly the water in from New York to like put in the dough, because that's
bullshit.
A big thing.
Bullshit.
It is bullshit. It's not true.
Yeah.
Like I was like, what? And I was like, how? What? But that's like insane. And they were just like, yeah, no, but for real, I'm serious. And it, I mean, I was just like, well, I'm gonna try it then. And I mean, and this pizza is slamming. It's totally slamming, and it's it's like a pizza pilgrimage.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to go and check that out sometime. What's the other place here in like Seattle area?
The other place is called, I'm forgetting exactly what the cross streets are, but it's something like First and Seneca or something like that. It's called Italian Family. I think it's Italian Family Pizza is the name of the place.
Okay. Okay.
And it's awesome. I walked in and like, and it was like pretty slow and I rolled in there. So like I got a chance to like talk to the dude for a sec and I was like, this accent is extremely particular and familiar. Where are you from? And he's like, yeah, I'm from Philly. And I was like, me too. I like try to like kind of play like I'm from Philly. You know, But so I was like, oh shit, this pizza is going to be legit. And he was like, you know it. Like, he's like, I've had, because he had just moved out here too. And he's like, I've had some pizza around here. And like, and I was like, yeah, dude, like, that's why I know that this pizza is going to be the shit. And it turned out it was the shit.
Yeah.
So I'm recommending Italian Family Pizza. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You have to buy a whole pizza. They don't have slices. Mm. But like, but it's the jam, and everyone that works there is from Philly. So if you want to know what Philly's like, just like talk to these dudes for a minute.
That's badass.
Yeah,
man.
It's awesome.
I love that. That's one thing that I love about going to Vancouver, mm-hmm. BC, too. There's all those places that you can walk in at 3 a.m. and get a slice of pizza. And it's just fucking pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Shitty. Mm-hmm. Not the best, but they give you the big slice. It's like $3.50 last time I was up there.
Yeah.
And like you just fucking mow on a big old slice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. There's not enough places here in Seattle that do that.
Right.
I don't think. Maybe a couple places on Capitol Hill, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So when did music come into your life, man? Like it sounds like you were doing it, you were playing music, what, playing guitar? You start playing guitar?
Yeah, guitar was the first instrument I got into. Yeah.
And that must have been before your teens, right? Because you said you were playing music with some guy that used to live in Jersey.
Yeah. Well, that was like, I was like 19 when I met him. So I've been playing for a little while at that point.
Sure.
But like,
sure.
I mean, I started playing guitar when I was 14 and like.
So like
I mean,
everybody else back in the 90s in Seattle, you started playing guitar.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think it was like, yeah, sometimes I try to think back and like, what made me want to pick up the guitar specifically? Yeah. And what, like, did I want to make rock music particularly? Or was it just kind of like a go-to? Or like, I lived in Seattle, so it totally makes sense. But I don't know. I think I just did like, yeah, I was down with rock. And like, that was kind of like, because like growing up, I didn't really, my parents didn't listen to rock and roll or anything. It was like my mom's side of the family, they're all like classical musicians and stuff. So like, my grandfather was the conductor of the Seattle Youth Symphony. And so I would see him conduct performances at like Benaroya Hall and stuff like that.
That's
when
amazing.
I was a kid. Yeah, which was like really crazy, you know? And But I still, like, I mean, I took piano lessons. My mom, like, had us all taking piano lessons from a pretty young age. But I just didn't really, when I was really young, I just didn't really care that much. But so I was also
Did you have to learn, like, theory and stuff like that?
Yeah, a little bit. But, like, it was weird because for how much, like, musical education is in my family, I never really, like, when I took guitar lessons, like, the dude taught me theory. And I was like, I have no fucking idea what you're talking about. Like, I just did not get it.
Sure.
I was like, I know how to go do-do-do. Like, you know, it's like, it's all about, like, I physically understand how that sounds, but I have no idea what you're saying. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like even sight reading and stuff like that, I just really didn't gravitate towards it that much. And I kept being like, well, I can learn this Clash song without knowing music theory. Like, why don't I just, like, listen to this Clash song and figure out how to play it? You know what I mean?
So could you do that? Could you listen to something and figure it out?
Yeah.
Even at a young age?
Yeah. I think that was one of the skills I kind of did have. Like, I'm definitely by no means, like, a virtuoso at any instrument I play, but, like, I was pretty good at just picking up songs if they were simple enough, you know,
like if
there wasn't, like, super dense, like, you know, block chords and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was just, like, you know, rock and roll stuff. It wasn't impossible, you know?
Yeah. So I still find it highly difficult.
Yeah.
I've never been able to do that. I think part of it is that it is because I just lose interest so quickly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what, like, that was my downfall in guitar lessons. Mm-hmm. I took guitar lessons on and off for, you know, maybe like 2 years or something like that.
Yeah. About same
when
for
I was
me.
In my mm-hmm. teens. And it was just like, I would lose interest so quick with, like, learning the Jimi Hendrix song.
Yeah, sure.
You know, or something like that. And I'd come back the next week and we'd be like, okay, let's move on to the next part of the song. And I'd be like, well, you know, we kind of have to go over the first part again.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, totally. No, and it was kind of like, it was honestly, it was really the same for me. Like, my teacher, it was cool because he was super invested and he always was just like, you know, like, I have a lot of students and most of them don't give a shit. You really do give a shit and you're really trying and I can see that. And, like, he always gave me mad props and made me feel good about what I was doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I didn't care about theory, didn't care about sight reading, and wasn't really interested in learning any of these, like, Van Halen songs or anything. You know, I was just kind of doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. But really, I never really gave that much of a shit about learning other people's songs, you know? Like,
sure,
I mean, I would learn riffs from, like, whatever songs and that would be kind of it, you know? But, like, for the most part, I just wanted to make music, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I quit taking lessons after like a year and a half or something and just kind of like did it on my own.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I probably never got any better at playing after that. Technically, I was probably about as good as I'm going to get at that age.
Right, right.
Yeah, when I was really trying to like practice scales and stuff. Uh-huh. But after that, I think my mind just really expanded in terms of, like, I can do anything I want, you know?
Sure. Sure.
And so that's when I started. And then, like, I kind of was trying to play in bands, but I was like, seriously, like, for how many fucking words I'm kicking out right now, you'd be shocked. When I was like a teenager, I was the shyest dude like ever. Like, I did not talk to people at all. I was terrified.
I find that so hard to believe.
I know. I find it a little funny now too. I wish I could have a conversation with like me age 16.
Sure, sure.
It'd be hella awkward, you know? Like, if like me now was like, oh dude, it's cool, like I'm you, it's okay, like I would still be like, oh.
I just said this to Lynn Shelton was in here, which is going to be an episode that comes up a little bit later this month, but we were kind of talking along the same lines. It's like, you know, I had this thought a couple days ago where I was like, you know, everybody says like if they take a like time travel back, like the conversation that they would have with themselves as a teenager. But, like, it's all such bullshit because the only thing, like, I know for myself and I know for many, many, many guys that if they went back in time and talked to their teenage self, the only topic of conversation that would come up because would be sex. It'd be like, I would be asking myself now, so you've had sex, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
When did it happen? When did it happen? How often? Is it going to happen? Like, you know.
So true, man. I just would have been, please tell me I'm not still a virgin.
Tell me it happens. Tell me it happens. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for real, man.
That would be the only fucking conversation. Apparently you would just be like, well, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I don't know. I just would have been like, oh, uh-huh.
So is that a whole Three Nights of Darkness thing? When is that going to happen?
Yeah, so when does that actually happen?
How much water will I need? So you move out to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you said earlier, like that that was like a big kind of fearful thing for you, but like you, apparently you made yourself do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, why?
I think I just, when I think about it now, I think I had certain realizations that maybe I wouldn't have even been able to put into words at the time, but it was just kind of like, I just fucking have to do something. Like, I'm not, like, I was, like I said, just really, like, not good at talking to people. I mean, a lot of that probably had to do with I was, like, homeschooled for so long. I just didn't know how to talk to people.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, did that must have played a huge part in that.
Yeah, because I was naturally kind of shy, but then, like, all that stuff just kind of played into it, too. And it just kind of made it worse, you know?
Sure.
And, but I knew I wanted to play music, and I was like, this is the one dude I know that will let me play music with him.
So you were like, I need to follow this guy because I can't meet somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, totally.
Oh,
I was just like,
okay.
And that's, oh my God. And it's like, it's a whole other ball of wax if we had a really long time to talk about. But like, that dude's family were fundamentalist Christian too.
Oh, really?
But fundamentalist
so you guys
Christian
were like
bikers.
Pairing up.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bikers?
I think bikers. And like, straight up, dude, like, dad has like a fu and a mullet and like wears cut off t-shirts that have pictures of like Jesus doing stuff on them and has like skull tattoos and stuff because they used to be like, you know, all into, I don't know, drug dealing and beating people up and stuff, you know,
sure.
Like bike gang kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, and his mom wears like Daisy Dukes and stuff. It's awesome.
What?
But like, I was like, what? That doesn't make sense because you guys love Jesus, right? But like, but, you know, like, but they totally look like bikers, but they also just, it would be the kind of thing where it'd be like, I remember there was some kind of conversation I had with his dad where he was like, yeah, so, like, what's your favorite food? And I was like, well, I don't know, what kind of food do you usually eat or something? And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, PB&J, really like eating PB&J. He's like, oh, you know, it's really great how peanut butter and jelly just go together so well, kind of like you and the Lord.
I
swear to God. And I was like, what? Like, how the fuck did you just do that, dude? And like, and they would like this is first day I get there, right? So like, we stayed with his family for like a few months, and they were, and then like, super sweet people, really nice, but just
so this was in Jersey. His family was still in Jersey.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And like, they would, the first day I got there, this is for real, like, they pick up the phone, and you know, pick up the phone, say hello, and they would pick up the phone and be like, praise the Lord.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, dude.
So that's like, even like more hardcore than your parents.
Yeah,
were, right?
Yeah. They were like way more hardcore with my parents, and I didn't know that was a thing.
Uh-huh.
You know? So and then I just kind of started being like, whoa, I don't know. Like, you know, and that's kind of, I think, when things started going a little like, this seems kind of nuts. Like, none of these things really make any logical sense. It's like totally like, you know, no interest in scientific whatever. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I'm not saying it's like that for all Christians, but this was the kind of Christianity that, like, you know, I just was like, this seems kind of nuts. And it sort of slowly started, like, you know, those seeds were planted for like, I'm getting out. But yeah, so it was funny because like,
now, was your friend kind of in the same boat? Like the guy that you went over there with?
Yeah, yeah, he was. But he just kind of ended up like, it's he's still totally in the Christian world. I kind of felt like he seemed like he was sort of just trying to get away from that stuff a little bit. But then he came back and he was like totally back in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And instantly just like got married and had kids and stuff. So like, we didn't even really play music for very long.
So he's had sex.
Yeah, apparently so. Good for him. I was like, hey, man, good on you. Being Christian, still having sex.
Lucky bastard. Yeah.
But
so you it sounds like you kind of moved away from them.
Mm-hmm.
You had to get away from that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
then you moved to Philly from there?
Yeah, and that, cuz what was really interesting is like, so I move out there, first people I meet, which are this dude's friends, are these like two of these dudes from this band Patterners Movement that I was in for like, I don't know, 8 years or something. It was like instantaneous. Like, I moved out there with this dude that didn't totally like, you know, end up panning out or whatever. But within like literally days, I met the dudes I would be in a band with for the next like 8 years or something.
Oh, wow.
So like,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. It was super like, they were buddies of his. And so we just like instantly kind of hit it off, and we all were just like, let's do this. Sure. Like, let's take it seriously, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I was pretty much like, I was moving out there with the idea that I'd be like, well, you know, maybe after a year I'll just come back to Seattle, but it's like, at least I did it. You know, I didn't really plan on staying there for a long time, but then like once I started playing with these dudes and we're like, no, this is legit. Like, we should fucking do this, you know? So we started taking it super serious and practicing a lot and like planning, making records and like started touring and all this kind of stuff. And that's when it kind of was like, oh no, I'm in Philly now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was sort of reluctant at first, but like I really grew to love the place a bunch after a while, but like, you know, but at first I was just kind of like, you know, okay, well, I guess I'll do this, you know, because it was the same thing. Like I was still coming out of like, I don't know anybody, you know? So like all of a sudden I know all these people that make rad music and are like fantastic musicians and like, okay, so like I'm doing this. I was like,
you found your niche.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was like, I don't care about anything else. This is what's up, you know?
That's fantastic. How old were you at that point?
Like 19, 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So still fairly young then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I moved out there when I was 19. I met those dudes right off the bat.
Okay.
So, like, within a few months, we were kind of, like, I don't think we had a name or anything, but we were, like, well, pretty soon after that we had a name, I guess. But, yeah, we were pretty, like, right off the bat.
Awesome. Awesome. So, how did the project Au Pairs start? Where's that origin?
Was that
in Philadelphia as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. That was like basically right. So I was, after I left, the band I was in before was called Pattern Is Movement. And then after I left Pattern Is Movement, I was just kind of like, I mean, I was really burned out at that point. Like the band was super, super, super intense. And I just was like, I need to like.
What kind of music were you guys playing?
It's
heavy.
It was kind of like, generically, I think people call it math rock.
Okay.
And like the band still exists and you wouldn't call their new records math rock, but there are still like some time signature things that happen occasionally. But like before it would be like, okay, my guitar is in, I'm playing in 7 and this guy's playing in 5 on his guitar. The drummer's playing in 3. We would do like, you know, all these like polyrhythms and stuff like that over the top of each other. And we would write math equations on the board to figure out how many times we have to play our parts. Like, it would be the kind of thing where I'd be like, okay, I played
this.
So
it was like fucking like legit math rock.
It was real intense. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You guys had it down to a science.
Totally.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty scientific.
Wow.
But it was also, what's really weird is like, you know, at the same time, like we had like, our influences weren't necessarily like, we were down with like Don Caballero and stuff like that, but it wasn't all like, okay, we're just like, we're a math rock band.
Sure.
We didn't think of ourselves that way. We thought we were kind of like a indie pop band. We like, our heroes were like, you know, Death Cab and Pedro and like stuff like that, you know? But we really didn't sound like that. Like I think we kind of thought we did, but
we
really didn't.
I remember that feeling. Yeah. No, I was in a band, the first like real band that I was in college. Like, I came back to my hometown. I was talking to some guys that I played music with and stuff. And we had the opportunity to play for like the MTV Rock the Vote thing in my college town. Which never ended up happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like telling these people about my band and I was like, yeah, we're like, we're kind of like a jammy Built to Spill. You know? And no, it was not like that at all. It was more like a jammy, like shitty Fish is what we were. And I have delusions of grandeur that we were this amazing indie rock band when no. It was just like a shitty, shitty jam band. Yeah.
It takes all kinds, you know.
Fucking fun. Yeah, come on. So Au Pairs, was that like, did that start off as kind of like a solo project for you then?
Yeah.
You kind
so
of branched
like,
off and did that.
Right, yeah. Like after I left Pattern, I was in this band with some other friends of mine that was kind of like what I was trying to do with Au Pairs. I was like, hey guys, all right. I got this great idea. I'm going to tell you what to play. And
went over real well.
Well, surprisingly, they were like, okay.
Okay.
And I was like, so they were from this band that like, seriously, if anyone out there has a chance, look it up. I don't know if you'll find it, but there's this band from Philly called Fuck With The Bull, Get The Horns.
Okay.
They're amazing. And these dudes were in that band. It was those dudes and this other dude playing guitar.
Uh-huh.
And that band's incredible. But they never like really made it out of the Philly scene or they didn't tour or anything like that.
Yeah,
but they're amazing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I played with these two dudes and we had this thing and I was like, yeah, let's do this. But the thing is, like, I kind of wanted it to sound kind of sort of more like what Au Pairs sounds like now, but like but that band, like, we ended up like way more like rocking. You know what I mean? Because those dudes don't really play like real mellow kind of stuff. Well, not totally. So it was funny because we had that project. And I was like talking to those dudes. I was like, hey, so I think we should start making more songs together, and I should take these songs and do my own thing with them because I just have this different idea. But what was interesting is both of those dudes ended up being in that band too. But it was different because the drummer, instead of playing a drum kit and being like, you know, playing all these things.
Sure, sure.
I had him playing a kick drum on its side, like a timpany, you know, like this.
Okay. Yeah,
so he
yeah.
had that, and he had a snare drum, and he had like a cymbal. And I think that's kind of it. So he played it like it was almost more like a classical style thing, you know what
I
mean?
Right,
that you'd see in
an
orchestra.
This is making a lot of sense to me right now because this new album has a lot of like classical influences in it.
Mm-hmm.
Classical music influences, like string section, horns, and you know, real awesomely arranged like percussion sections and stuff like that, which I'm totally a sucker for.
Cool.
And it's making a lot of sense because you kind of grew up in that realm a bit, right?
Yeah,
you were influenced by that, obviously.
Yeah,
in
totally.
Your own musicality. And now you get to this point where you're kind of trying, you're just starting to kind of like orchestrate all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's kind of a
cool arc
that
you went on there, Corey.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I think it was kind of like I did it on purpose to a degree because I wanted to.
More of like you were getting more and more comfortable with yourself and what you wanted to do musically, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And there was like, being in Pattern, which was a very, like, there was a lot of stuff going on in that music, and I was really into making music like that, you know? Like, we did a lot of really textural kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so leaving that band, I was just like, all right, I still want to make textural kind of music. I just want to write all of it this time, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to, like, and it wasn't like, it's kind of this thing where, like, people would come into the band, and I'd be like, I'm super stoked you want to be in this band. Just so you know, you're probably not going to write any music. So if you're not into that, I totally get it.
Yeah.
But this probably isn't the project for you. You know what I mean?
Did you have anybody that were just like, nope.
Yeah, I think some people were definitely just like, well, yeah, I don't think that's really what I'm trying to do. And I'd be like, that's cool. Like, I wouldn't want to do that either, honestly.
At least you were upfront about it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's like, I try not to be a dick about it because I'm not trying to, like, you know, hey, like, I'm super fucking on board for you to play in this band. But if you don't want to do it like this, that makes total sense. But, like, anyway, so I would just kind of, people would be like, all my buddies would be like, this dude, like, I played with for a bunch of years, he played drums in this one band, but then he was, like, playing guitar and singing in the same band. They changed, like, instruments a whole lot. And then, so I was like, wow, this dude's, like, really good at those instruments. And he's like, he sings, too. And I was like, oh, you know, you should sing with my band. I'm going to have all these harmonies and stuff. And he was like, oh, yeah, like, I also am, like, a piano teacher. I'm like, what the fuck? And then he's like, yeah, and I also teach cello. And I was like, what? And so I'm like, all right, why don't you play cello in my band, you know? So it's this kind of thing where, like, that would keep happening. And I'd be you know, hey, dude, you're totally my buddy, and we're awesome friends. And, like, hey, like, you play marching band drums? Why don't you play marching band drums in my band? You know what I mean? So it just kept happening.
You just kept on adding things.
Yeah, like, the band in Philly, I had, like, a 13-piece band for a while.
Wow.
It was like full on, like, 6 to 8 strings, depending on what show, like 3 to 4 guitar players, like 2 percussionists, flute, trumpet, multiple singers, like just like tons of stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that was totally awesome, but also just like so many emails and work to get like a single practice together.
Sure.
And eventually I just kind of was like, if I keep doing this, it's the only thing I'm going to be able to do, you know?
Right,
so I had
right.
to kind of pare it down. I'm using quotation marks.
Uh-huh.
The band's called Au Pairs, Pare It Down.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it was kind of like this thing where, like, I had this huge band, but then I would go on tour, and then on tour it would be like, well, I obviously can't take all these people.
Right.
Yeah, and, like, nobody in my band could even...
You can't pay for that.
Right, yeah, totally, no way. So, like, and nobody in my band could even tour, so I'd be like, all right, cool, I need to find some people. And then, like, it ended up being, like, me and this, like, 3 other dudes that had never, like, so we did, like, this first tour I went on was in Europe, and I'd never been to Europe before, and I was super pumped.
Well, that's where I wanted to go with that, too, like, and I knew that was kind of your first tour, was a European tour.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's like, I mean, because I toured in the States a whole bunch with my old band.
You had.
In
okay,
Pattern,
okay,
yeah. I mean, we toured in the States plenty in Pattern's movement, but, like, you know, it was... it was one of those things where, like, we never really got too much above the level where we might get $100 for the night, and we find one of the guys in one of the other bands puts us up on their floor that's covered in beer stains. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But in Europe, it's like, you know, I'm just some guy, and they put me up, and they pay me, like, you know, 300 euros to play this show, and I have an actual apartment for my band that's, like, cleaned, and, like, you know, we'll do, like, our sound check, and then go up to this apartment where they hired someone to make us dinner, and it's delicious, and then, like, there's a fridge full of beer, and they'll show us around town the next day.
So
and
how long was your European tour? How many days?
I did two, like, 6 months apart that were about, like, a month and a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What countries did you hit up?
Mostly like Western Europe. So we went to like Spain, Italy, France, Belgium, Amsterdam. Like Amsterdam's not a country, but like went like a lot of like, you know, I don't know, 30 different countries each tour.
That's amazing.
Like that. A lot of shows in Germany. We opened for TV on the Radio in Munich. That was like a real high point, you know.
Wow.
Because that's like, I mean, at this point, I had kind of just got this thing going. I only had an EP out at the time. And I hadn't been a singer before that in bands, you know, was my first like thing doing that. And so to get up in front of like 2000 people and like just kind of like
in a different fucking country.
Yeah. In a country I've never been to before. And like just like it, the whole thing is just completely mind blowing. It was like the best month of my entire life.
Were
like,
you nervous? Were you nervous about that?
Yeah. I mean, I was, but there's a moment where like, you know. My music's not like super popular or anything, but I have to like, I've been doing it long enough to know that if it sucked, I'd be the first to admit it. You know what I mean?
Sure,
so like, so there's this thing where I'm just kind of like, yeah, it's crazy. And I'm fucking like, holy shit. Like I'm getting up in front of like way more people than like I've ever done before. But I look, you know, like I'm like playing the whole intro to the song and like looking down, just kind of like looking at the band members. And there's the moment where I like turn around to the mic and I'm like, holy shit, there's 2000 people here. And I'm just like, but you know what? The thought was like, I belong here. Like I was asked to play this show. You know what I mean? Like this was like, you know, this happened because I made it happen. You know what I mean? I was like, I deserve to be here. I just like, that was the way I kind of like went through it in my head, you know? So I was just like, yeah, fuck that. I mean like, yeah, it's scary and all that, but it's not like it's like I'm down. I'm up for it. You know what I mean?
You know what you are, Corey? You're an East Coast shithead.
That's how I like to think of myself. You know what I mean? Whenever people ask me, I'm like, yeah, dude, fuck you.
Hey, fuck you,
you
man.
Know what I mean? East Coast, motherfucker.
I know what pizza is. Yeah. Well, Corey, dude, I'm really stoked that we could make this happen finally. And the new album is fantastic.
Thanks, man.
I'm a big fan of it. And I've been listening to it nonstop since you sent it to me.
Thanks.
It's really good, man. I'm super impressed.
Thanks a lot.
Super
That's
impressed.
Awesome.
Yeah. So what's coming up next? Are you going to tour in support of this? What are you going to do?
Yeah. So like the record just came out and this is like, I mean, I haven't had a record out in a couple of years, so I'm kind of like letting it get out there a little bit
and hopefully
build up some momentum and all that sort of thing. And then the plan is, just because, I mean, I've only toured Europe so far with this band, which is kind of ridiculous, but
that's
like,
insane.
But I figured, exactly, you know, the label's insane. A Spanish label. I think the first thing we're going to do is like, we're going to set up a tour for like, maybe like April for like Europe. And then I'll probably start touring a whole bunch after that.
Okay.
But that's like, until then, I'm just like playing around locally a bit and then like, you know, saving up some money for tour and then like making it happen, you know?
All right, man. All right.
So,
well, that's great.
Yeah.
And keep me posted what's coming up because we'll put it out there.
Cool.
We'll
do.
Yeah. Corey Duncan, thank you once again for coming on.
Where can we
find Au Pairs on the web? Where are you at?
The best place is, well, if you want to buy records, you probably want to go to the Acorella website.
Can we spell that really quick?
Acuarela.
Yeah,
I had to do it that slow for my own purposes.
AcorellaDiscos.com.
Yep. That's that's where you can get the CDs. The vinyls are through me. If you just Google Au Pairs vinyl, it's probably the best bet.
Okay.
But and then there's the Au Pairs Bandcamp, which is
Au Pairs One
Bandcamp.
We had to figure that out.
Yeah. I need to get a website. That's the thing that I need to do in the next few months before this tour happens.
Yes.
That's like my main God, it's so stupid. I haven't
And
done
you're
that
on
yet.
And you're on Facebook and Twitter.
Facebook,
as well.
Twitter, yeah, you know, all
there
that stuff. Tumblr, you know.
Well, thanks again, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a real pleasure chatting with you. Yeah. And you can find out more about us by going to www.air-raid.net. See, I've got a website.
Oh, that's real classic.
I don't know if you knew that, Corey.
Well, I feel very intimidated right now.
Never toured Europe, but God damn it, I got a website.
That's pretty cool.
And if you click on the Archives tab, you can check out all 216 episodes there, including Death Cab for Cutie, Mud Honey, let's see, comedians like Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, all those there. 216 episodes, free for your listening pleasure, and now with Corey Duncan of Au Pairs. So go and check that out. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and you can find us on iTunes and leave us a little review. Why don't you, right? That always helps out. Okay, we're going to go out this week with the song Under the Olive Trees, which also has a fantastic video that you should check out. So type that into a Google search, Au Pairs Under the Olive Trees. Thanks for listening, everybody. Had a great time talking at you, because that's basically what this is. But thank you. We appreciate your emails and your love, and we'll be back next week with the band Pinback on next week's episode. So, okay, Under the Olive Trees by Au Pairs, and we'll be back next week. Thanks, everyone.
Grass of blue and green, sun will warm.